Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning and welcome to First Things First. It's a Monday morning here in New York. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Good weekend.
Great weekend. Fun weekend.
Lots of good basketball to talk about.
Chair
you're getting a little lower.
Yes, it did. Get that back.
Well, there you go.
You know what? It's your hair. It's not used to the extra weight.
The extra weight.
It's an pushed it down.
That's definitely
Jenna,
what
great.
It was.
Thank
beautiful
you.
Red dress
thank
on
you,
this
thank
Monday.
You, thank you.
Give
we got
the people what they need.
We are going to give you what you need. We've got a big Monday show. So the
eye
NFL
candy.
Draft is in the books. We had a big upset in the Eastern Conference, but we start with the much-hyped series out west. Game one, Rockets at Warriors. Pick this one up late. Warriors up three, less than 17 seconds to go. KD had 35 points, but gets the ball stripped from him. James Harden will go up for three. That won't go. Chris Paul tries to grab the loose ball. Not happy about the no foul call there. He gets the tech and subsequently ejected. Harden wanted a foul called on the shot, a theme all game long. Warriors not letting him land. The refs were a big theme in this one. Warriors win game one, 104-100. Here's an unhappy James Harden after the game.
I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results. But when you, especially we all know what happened, you know, a few years back with Kawhi, like that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results. And it's plain and simple.
James Harden after the game said he just wants a fair chance that the refs need to call the game the way it's supposed to be called. He just wants a fair chance. The refs need to call the game the way it's supposed to be called. He's specifically talking about closing out on three-pointers, feeling like he got fouled several times in those situations.
I've been fouled by James on a James three-pointer before. I ain't trying to hear that. Nah, I ain't going with that one. I'm straight.
All right, CC, is James Harden right to be upset with the officiating in this game?
Well, the officiating was not consistent. You know, typically, you listen to referees that are part of the shows and part of the telecast, and they talk about there is no regular season refereeing and postseason refereeing, and that's just not true. They can't admit it to the public, but the style for which they're going to play, how NBA players play defense in the postseason is totally different, and the refs typically call it. Now, as far as the three-point shooting, we saw last year Harden didn't get as many calls in the playoffs as he did during the regular season. Thus far, he seemed to be getting the same calls in the regular season on the three-pointers. In this game, early, he didn't. And if you look at late in the game, the last one with Draymond, I thought Draymond could have gone to the side. Harden was going a little more forward and forced his legs into Draymond. But that's at the end of the game. And they hadn't called that on Klay Thompson and a couple other Warriors during the game. So typically, as a player, you say, okay, the referee is going to be consistent throughout the game. So at the end of the game, he shouldn't have expected that call. But how they called the three-point shooting, not letting the Rockets land, was a huge advantage for the Warriors in this game. And it was totally different than what they had called during the regular season against Harden and other jump shooters.
And when you saw the coach and Chris Paul and James Harden after the game, their frustrations boil over, the context here matters. You know how we get those end-of-game final two-minute reports? Well, the individual teams can get those reports for the full 48 minutes. And in last year's Western Conference Finals, the Warriors got the officiating edge, according to the NBA's own data, in six of the seven games. The Warriors were plus over 90 points in the Western Conference Finals that went seven games last year and had an enormous edge in games 5, 6, and 7. So that was the Rockets' feeling when they didn't win last season. Then do you remember this year, the play on January 3rd, Rockets-Warriors, when Kevin Durant is 5 steps out of bounds?
Mm-hmm.
Probably the worst missed call in the season all year. Now the Rockets end up winning on a wild James Harden 3, but that still happened. And now, first half, first game, your whole season's been building to this. And the refs tell you, we missed at least 4 of them. That was 10 free throws, not 12, because one of them Harden made the 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's 10 free throws the Rockets were deprived of that the rules say they should have gotten. And there's an element of, see, are the officials different in the postseason, or are they just older? Because one of the things Houston believes is, and they think they have the data to back it up, is the officials who have been in the league longer to where this was not a point of emphasis, the landing space, are less likely to call it than the younger officials. In the playoffs, you get veteran officiating crews, and they seem to be going against it. But whatever the reason, the Rockets have now played 8 critical postseason games last year against the Warriors. And the Warriors have got a clear and obvious edge in the officiating in 7 of the 8. In a series that, you said it when you walked in this morning, it's a missed opportunity for Houston. A win there would have been enormous. And they should have, I don't want to say expected it, but given how Steph played, given how Klay played, given that the Warriors had less than 48 hours rest, they could have won that game and stolen home court advantage. And they feel like the refs took that opportunity from them.
One point against that argument is that the refs in game admitted to the coaches and the players. So they're the same older refs. They admitted during the game that they had missed the calls. If it was after the game and they had missed those calls and the refs hadn't said anything, then I might be able to look back to the theory of, oh, well, maybe it's the older refs because this is a rule that's been in the last couple postseasons. No, so the thing, it was a great opportunity. And that's one part of the game. Golden State and how they played basketball, too, that should be part of the conversation, too, because the refs didn't take the game away. It's just one of the storylines looking to the result with Golden State not playing a great game, Steph being injured, Klay being injured, and them being able to summon up some type of strength less than 48 hours after clinching against the Clippers in L.A. to be able to get named game number 1. That should be the storyline, because I believe that game number 1, being able to steal a win, Golden State, I believe will be the difference in the series.
This is the way the Rockets play. This is what they count on. They count on being able to make that shot and to get that call. If the refs don't change the way they're calling this series, do the Rockets have a chance?
Well, if the refs start ignoring the rule on fouling 3-point shooters, no, the Rockets will be in real, real trouble. I mean, I think everyone believes this is going to be a very close series, or it has the potential to be a very close series. And if you're talking about, the Rockets believe last night they missed 8 of these foul calls. The refs reportedly admitted to missing 4 in the first half. If you're talking about taking away 15 to 20 free throw opportunities, then no, nobody would be able to overcome that. And for people to think, oh, they'll get it right, they'll get it back in game two, last year, the NBA apologized for the Game 5 officiating, and then the Warriors had the edge in Game 6. They apologized for both of those, and then the Warriors had the biggest edge of the series in Game 7. During that 0-for-27 streak, there were multiple times that the NBA's own data says, oh, they fouled him on a 3-point shot. And so it's just what's so odd to me is you would think if there would be any team that wouldn't get the benefit of the doubt from the officials, it would be Golden State with the way they treat the officials with Draymond and KD's technicals. But that hasn't been the case when these two teams have been head-to-head.
I'll say this again. The refs were part of the storyline, but they had nothing to do with Clint Capella, why he didn't show up to the game. It had nothing to do with P.J. Tucker, why he had 0-for-4. And 39 minutes of playing, got 0 points. So, yeah, we can sit here and blame it on the ref, 7-8 line. But in this game, the Rockets had a chance to win the game on the court. Harden had the ball in his hand. He decides to take a 3-pointer contested by Draymond. He didn't have to take that 3-pointer. He could have taken it to the bucket. There was still time to build. Like, or if he's the MVP of the league, he can also make that shot. He'll call that a good shot. That was a better look than Damian Lillard had, the knockdown to be able to get them to be able to advance. So I think there were still more opportunities and more with the X's and O's and what they didn't do. and the Warriors starting, making a lineup adjustment, putting the Hampton Five, starting them out there, that was just as important. If you want to talk about the referee, and there's other things we should be able to talk about, which led the Warriors to getting game number one.
There's no doubt that the Rockets, officiating aside, are going to look at the missed corner threes, P.J. Tucker and others, the inefficiency from wasn't just P.J. Tucker, but also Daniel House when he had his opportunities, Iman Shumpert getting a bigger role because Austin Rivers was out, Clint Capella not being able to take advantage of
the shots
mismatch. Right. Yeah. Like when you start the Hamptons five, you would think that Harden pick and roll lob would be there. It wasn't there the entire game. And Gerald Green played 7 minutes, and the Rockets were outscored by 16 points in the 7 minutes he was on the court. They maybe should have learned the lesson from last year's playoffs against this team. Gerald Green's a tough matchup against Golden State. So they had other opportunities, but all those things notwithstanding, this is now a theme for them going on the second straight year in the playoffs against this team.
All right, when you look at the Warriors, the big name that pops up, Kevin Durant.
Man.
Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. KD continued his hot streak in the playoffs. 35 points to help lead the Warriors to a Game 1 win. Nick, put a grade on Durant's performance.
Oh, you have to give him an A. Ever since he reminded the world, I'm Kevin Durant, he's been playing like the best version of Kevin Durant we've ever seen.
Yeah.
He has been spectacular ever since that game two against the Clippers last night or yesterday afternoon was just a continuation of this. He carried them on a night when Stephen Clay did not play well. He gets an A.
Mm-hmm. I knew before this playoffs we were in a chase to find out who was the best player in the world. And right now, Kevin Durant's leading. He don't have the trophy in his house yet, but, man, he is leadered. He is playing the most amazing basketball of his whole career. When he was put to the test, Patrick Beverley brought out the best in Kevin Durant. I'm looking forward to seeing what else he's going to do the rest of the playoffs.
35 points out of KD last night. Warriors take game one. Coming up, we'll head east. Can Kyrie and the Celtics continue to dominate Giannis and the Bucks? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. All right, we'll get to the Celtics-Bucks in a second, but first some highlights presented by Hilton. Sixers-Raptors, Joel Embiid drives, Joel Embiid delivers.
Maybe the only Sixers highlight in this game. This was an annihilation. I mean, the Raptors played extraordinarily. And
right from the beginning.
From the jump, man.
Ooh, Warriors-Rockets, Harden going up for the layup, but he was not welcome by Kevin Durant.
It was really exciting to see the Warriors. They're fully engaged from a defensive standpoint. Jenna, as you told us last week, that thing that hit the lawnmower, man, they hit it, revved it up. It stayed running. It didn't cut off.
Correct.
All right?
Not all my metaphors are right metaphors. Same game, Steph Curry.
It was right.
Gets Nene one-on-one, hits him a sweet crossover, and buries the three-pointer. Watch it.
Yeah, Nene shouldn't have been in this basketball game. They put him in the game for rebounding on a Harden free throw when Harden's a 90% free throw shooter. But Steph, no matter how cold he is throughout a game, he's terrifying with the ball in his hands. And it felt like even though he was so cold, he was going to make that shot.
When they knew Nene was on him, KD yelled to Steph, take him.
Yep.
And that's exactly what he did. Bad matchup, huge mistake by the staff of the Rockets, putting him in the game late there.
Moving on to game one between the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. All the focus coming in was how to slow down Giannis. Well, the Celtics figured it out to the tune of a 112-90 win. Kyrie Irving leading the way for Boston with 26 points, 11 assists, and Al Horford was instrumental in making Giannis uncomfortable. Giannis held to just 22 points on 20 shots. Big win for Boston. Here's Kyrie after the game.
Obviously, it's just one game. You know, we're not going to shoot as well as we did. You know, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I hope it does. But I'm just saying that I'm just being real with going out and how I manage the game. These guys helped me tremendously. You know, I don't really want to talk much. I don't really want to say much. We're in the huddle, but they bring it out of me, and I'm appreciative of that because they allow me to just be me.
Obviously, we got to go watch tape tomorrow, and we got to see what we did right and wrong, and once we realize what we did wrong and what we did right, that's it. We leave it right there and focus on Tuesday. On Tuesday is a totally different game, and we got to come out, play hard defensively, move the ball, and get a win.
Bucks came out and said they'll give themselves 24 hours to sit and stew over this and to wallow a little bit, and then that's it. They come back out and they play Milwaukee basketball. How surprised were you by the outcome of this and how the Celtics showed up?
I was for Milwaukee to get just dominated start to finish like that, where they had one offensive quarter, the second quarter, where they had all looked like the team they had looked like all year long, where Giannis didn't have a single moment in the game where it looked like he felt comfortable. If he didn't hit a few threes, he would have had, I mean, just an impossibly bad game. And those threes are not reliable, and I don't think they're duplicable. I was shocked. I obviously thought Milwaukee would win. I definitely did not think Boston had a blowout in them, not in Milwaukee. And what Al Horford was able to do in that matchup with Giannis was just spectacular.
And Aaron Baines to a degree.
Aaron Baines did a good job in fewer possessions, fewer minutes. He did a good job. But Baines, at least you understand, Baines can go size with Giannis.
Yeah.
Horford is shorter. Horford is strong, but he's not as athletic. Horford just outthought Giannis, and the Celtics' game plan as a whole defensively was spectacular. But what's so disappointing for the Bucks is the Celtics didn't add any fancy defensive wrinkles. They didn't change what they do. They did what they do, and they just thoroughly out-executed the Milwaukee Bucks, who all year long, 86 games through the season, had been the most consistent, best team in basketball on both ends of the court. And then they get destroyed in their first home playoff game around two.
Yeah, Al Horford was spectacular. Played great positional defense on Giannis, been able to put a body on him where he couldn't go through him, but also trying to think of where he wanted to go. You can't just play defense on a great player like Giannis with one player. Every time Giannis had the basketball, they had at least six eyes, two other people in the paint with their eyes on Giannis. So it wasn't as if Al was able to do it by himself. They had a different game plan defensively. They hadn't played this way during the regular season. Huge adjustment from the Pacers series was they put Marcus Morris in the starting lineup. They wanted to play smaller. It gave Milwaukee more problems. But I know Milwaukee, they're going to look at this game tape and be like, if we hit the shots that we normally hit, then we're going to be all right. The Celtics are not going to shoot 20% better than Milwaukee. And Milwaukee got to every place on the court they wanted except Giannis. They got open corner shots. Brook Lopez got some looks from three-point line.
Pat Connaughton was wide open.
All game. So I think that when you look at the tape, let's not overreact. Now, my guy Nick, he's a part of overreacting. Before this series, they got no chance. I sat here and told him, I know he gets tired of it. Boston has a chance in Milwaukee, Nick. They will win one of those games. Because I thought that they would match up well with them. I didn't think that Giannis in Milwaukee, this is the first time they've been to the second round since what, 1991 or something? I thought it would have an effect. I thought that they would miss Brogdon. I thought it would be competitive. I thought they would be in the games. If they were able to win, make a shot here at the end, we don't know that. But I thought it would be competitive in Milwaukee compared to a lopsided series.
Well, we both before the series said with Mannix out here, Milwaukee in five. So if you must have thought that Milwaukee's going to win the next one.
But remember the first two games?
Absolutely. You asked me period point blank. You said, does Boston have a chance?
Did I say five or six?
So when I thought we both said Milwaukee in five and Mannix said Milwaukee in seven, but regardless, that you did make the point that you could see a scenario where Boston stole one of the first two. And I said, if Boston doesn't steal one of the first two, they've got to win four out of five. And I don't see that happening, which is why I didn't see a path to victory in this series for the Celtics. I'll be very clear here. I still don't think the Celtics are going to win this series. I still think Milwaukee is the better team. But so much of them being the better team is wrapped in them having the best player on the court, is wrapped in Giannis playing like Giannis. Giannis was 4 of 16 on two-pointers. The shot that he has dominated the league with, probably is going to win the MVP because of everything with inside of 6 feet of the basket, unassisted dunks, getting there. He seemed, by the way, was getting to his spots, but was being met with three people at the rim and couldn't finish. What Boston did against him was spectacular. It was the best anyone has defended him all year long. The reason I brought up the threes is Giannis made three threes. So he had 13 points on non-three-point shots, 5 free throws, 4 twos. That Milwaukee can't win that way. Like, I understand they had the other guys miss shots, but they have to have Giannis play better. And this is, you said on the Kevin Durant thing, that there's a 4-5 man race for who's going to declare themselves best player in the world.
Yeah.
Giannis was in the pole position. His team swept. He had 41 points in the closeout game. Mm-hmm. He looked like the MVP of the league. And then in this game, he was uncomfortable from the opening tip and never got comfortable. So it's now on him to respond in game two, because while I still think Milwaukee's going to win the series, I'm confident that if they go down 0-2 at home, then we're talking a whole different situation. Then they have to win 4 out of 5, with 3 of those games being in Boston.
Are you equally as confident? Because we sat here on Friday and we said, how do you stop Giannis? And then it was, well, you don't stop Giannis, you slow down Giannis. Well, Brad Stevens put together a way, whether it was more starting or whatnot, to slow down or make Giannis uncomfortable. Why can't you just rinse and repeat? Why can't you throw that same defensive output again out there? Or do you just not count on
him? The reason is because they're not robots. Milwaukee won't be surprised by the smaller lineup. They'll also have the game film to be able to say, you know something? In these positions, let's put Giannis. Let's put Giannis in the low post. So now he doesn't have to go through 2 or 3 defenders. And they had a bunch of open shots. They just missed those shots. So they're not robotic. It's hard to duplicate that because the energy that players will play with, now they're down 0-1. They are desperate. They got to win game number 2. It's the first must-win of the second round of the playoffs. So that's probably the number one reason. And the reason why they can't do it again, Jenna, is because Milwaukee, which Nick was preaching, they've been the most consistent team from game number 1 to game number 82. So the chance of Boston doing it to the team that has been the most consistent, the probability of that is low.
Well, what the Bucks have got to be prepared for is Jason Tatum's not going to score 4 points again. Jason Tatum's going to play better. They won. The Celtics blew him out, and Kyrie was sensational. But Kyrie had a game that I could see him doing again. 26 and 11 on just around 50% shooting. Like, Kyrie can duplicate that performance. So it's not like that the Celtics won because Kyrie went off for 40.
It's not like they won because they played out of their mind.
Exactly right. They played defensively, they played as well as they can. Offensively, they played their best game of the playoffs, but it wasn't something they can't do again. Milwaukee's got to approach game 2, as Chris said, as a must win, because for their hopes, their championship hopes, I believe that it is.
All right, game 2 slated for Tuesday night. Take a break. Coming up, talk some football. Can Josh Rosen turn his career around as a Miami Dolphin? That's next on First Things First. On Sunday, Kevin Harvick looks to conquer the Monster Mile and recapture the checkered flag at Dover. Catch the action at 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
I might go to Dover. Check that out. Then check out the Sixers. They're playing on Sunday, too.
Time now for say, right? What? Yeah. Kevin Durant dropped 50 points in the Warriors' game 6 win Friday to close out the Clippers. After that game, Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams were open to suggestions for slowing down KD. Say what?
What more could you have done to slow Kevin down, especially in the first half?
I answer this.
Go ahead.
What you think? You played basketball before? What you think? Honestly, that's an honest question. What you think? You watch a lot of basketball. You with ESPN. I mean, he's Kevin Durant.
I promise we tried.
We didn't roll over. And we didn't just say, hey, man, you know what? Just come on, give us 50 tonight. Of course not. You know, he's a hell of a player. The shots he took, you know, he made some tough shots. If you was a coach, what would you tell us to do? Thank you.
We tried everything. All right. So we tried everything. We had several different coverages for KD, and
they didn't work.
Lou Williams goes on and gives a more expansive answer. Nobody's had any answer for KD since KD reminded the world, maybe he was reminding himself, I'm Kevin Durant. You guys know who I am? Do I know it? When I had
No. He said, you know who I am.
You know who I am. But it seems like he reminded himself, because since then, he's averaging 41 a game.
Since then,
he's been unbelievable. And he was Friday night. He was, what do you have, 38 in the first half on Friday night?
I think Kevin Durant recognized Boogie is out. Steph is not playing the best basketball. I have the best matchup on the court. We don't have a bench. It's time to start cooking before I get out of town.
yeah. before I get out of town.
He reminded everyone, based on the one guy who actually did stop him one game, which mm-hmm. was Patrick Beverley. All right, speaking of Kevin Durant, stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Sticking with KD, boy, he had a great night in the Warriors game one win, scoring 35 points. He's averaging over 40 points over his last five games. Warriors beat the Rockets yesterday. Nick, how do the Rockets slow down Durant?
Well, listen, I actually think the Rockets' game plan defensively yesterday was good. They forced 20. They had 20 turnovers. Not all of them forced, I should say. Yes. Some of them were just careless Warrior passes. And they were not going to let Steph and Klay get off for open threes. And if KD's going to hit contested long twos, you just got to live with it. Rockets got to be better offensively. They'll deal with KD 11 or 25, 35 points. They can deal with that if the other things happen.
Yes, if KD plays this way, the Rockets have a chance to be able to win this series. You still have to hold down the other guys. You need to be concerned about Draymond. Draymond getting their offense started early really gave them some problems. But when KD is hitting the Dirk step back, oh, there's no defense for a seven-footer shooting the basketball the way he's shooting it.
He is playing the best basketball he's ever played in his career over these last five games.
To the East now, Giannis struggled and the Bucks lost to the Boston Celtics. Giannis had 22 points on 21 shots. Nick, how were the Celtics able to slow Giannis down?
Oh, average Al Horford wasn't so damn average in this game. He was sensational. Mm-hmm. Big ol' Aaron, annoying, sweaty, probably don't smell mm-hmm. good, Aaron Baines
yep.
was excellent as well. And Giannis never seemed comfortable. Giannis couldn't get to his spots, couldn't get those unassisted dunks that he mm-hmm. might have won the MVP with this year. And the Celtics game plan, Brad Stevens and company, were great.
Be careful thinking Al Horford can't do this for a whole series. Did this last year to Joel Embiid. Gave him a bunch of problems. So this is going to be a tough series for Giannis. It's first time to the second round going against a player like Horford who has a great game plan assisted by Brad Stevens. Man, this is going to be an exciting series.
All right, moving on to the NFL now. The Denver Broncos drafted Drew Lock in the second round. John Elway compared the Joe Flacco to Drew Lock transition this way. Quote, we look at it as the Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers type situation. Nick's laughing. See, what are your thoughts?
I need to be in these press conferences just so I can stand up and tell them, stop talking. These general managers, these guys been around pro football, Elway basically his whole life, now running the Broncos. And John does a lot of things right. But quarterback is, and picking them is not one of them. Just.
Is there something about once you go to your seventh Super Bowl at that magical number, you go a little crazy? Like, maybe Dave Gettleman was fine. Then he went to his seventh Super Bowl. Now he's lost it. John Elway was fine.
John Elway's a different story because he was a player.
Well, and he
John
carried
Elway
him
carried
to the first
franchise. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Absolutely right. But ever since that seventh Super Bowl, he's been trying to pick these quarterbacks. They're all tall. They're all mediocre. Drew Lock in the second round, by the way, not a bad pick. But comparing Flacco to Favre and Lock to Rodgers.
Question, who would you want? John Elway picking your quarterback or Magic Johnson picking your point guard?
Oh, man. That's a...
All right, moving on. Finally, Josh Rosen was traded to Miami a day after the Cardinals took Kyler Murray number one overall. New Dolphins coach Brian Flores says Rosen will have a chance to compete for the starting job with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He addressed the trade over the weekend. Take a listen.
Cardinals fans, thank you so much for all of the continued support this past year. I know we didn't win as many games as we all would have hoped, but I had an unbelievable time here in the desert. Unfortunately, my time here is coming to an end, but you guys are really getting a hell of a player in Kyler Murray, and he's going to do great things for the Red Sea. Kyler, I just want to congratulate you and your family on getting drafted. Arizona is a really special place, and you're going to love playing and living here. And to my teammates, staff, and everyone who worked at the facility, I can't thank you enough for all the support and great memories we've created this past year. I'm really wishing all of the Arizona Cardinals the best of luck moving forwards. And Miami, I couldn't be more excited to become a Dolphin. I'm ready to attack this new chapter in my life and give you guys everything I have each and every day. My bags are packed, and I'm on a flight first thing tomorrow morning. So get ready, South Florida, and go Fins. And Kyler, one more thing. An awesome two-bedroom in Old Town just came onto the market, so let me know if you're interested, and I think I can get you a pretty good deal.
He's like, I'm out of here. See, is this a good trade for Rosen and the Miami Dolphins?
Great trade. Great trade for the Dolphins. The Dolphins wouldn't be pushed or forced in. They had a higher second-round pick. They end up getting out of that pick, even dropping down further. The asking price, the Cardinals, what they wanted for. The Dolphins told them, this is it. Like, this is what it's worth right now. And they decided to trade him. I thought he did a great job from the beginning in Josh Rosen. That right there, releasing that video, won him a bunch of fans. He actually stayed in Arizona to participate in Larry Fitzgerald's big-time softball game. He's got a bunch of celebrities. He's been doing it for a number of years. They raise a lot of money for local charities there in the Valley of the Sun. So great PR move by him. Very, very mature. This is professional football. You've been traded. You're moving on. You're going to another good franchise. And you might have a better chance to be successful than you would have with the Cardinals. So I'm happy for him. He won me over. Because seeing him do that, that was a classy move, something he didn't have to do. And if I get traded after a year, that horrible offensive line, I doubt that I released that same video thanking them and welcome Kyler to the team that I used to be the quarterback for.
All right, so on the trade, great job by Miami. They're sitting there at 48. They trade back to 62, pick up a future second-round pick, and Josh Rosen for the 48th pick of the draft. A great trade for Miami, and Rosen should be able to compete with Fitzy instantly and probably become the starting quarterback, I would imagine, maybe week one for them. For Arizona, everyone knew they were selling on him, so nobody was going to outbid themselves. Even by those standards, I think they got the bare minimum return, but at least they can say, we got a second-rounder for him. But to your point from after they drafted Kyler, they had to trade him. The whole league knew they had to trade him. So that happened, right? So that was that they couldn't bring them together in camp. I want to say something defending Josh Rosen, though, because a guy I like a lot, a guy I know a little bit, Steve Smith, went viral this weekend filleting Josh Rosen because Josh Rosen had the audacity about 2 hours before he was traded to unfollow the Cardinals on Instagram. And Steve Smith made that an indictment on his work ethic, on his competitive spirit, saying this is what's wrong with him. What you saw in that video is what's right with Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen showing up to the mini camp before the draft, knowing he's probably not the quarterback. Josh Rosen saying all the right things. What you said, he stayed in town specifically to go to Larry Fitzgerald's charity softball tournament where he then actually won the home run derby. Fitzy, one of the best pros we have in football, said this about Josh Rosen. I don't think anybody could have handled it more professionally. He's been a consummate pro throughout the whole process. I think he's got a lot of people's respect for the way he's conducted himself, and I know all of us are rooting for him in his next stop. Josh Rosen did not ask to be drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, did not ask for them to then fire the head coach and for them to hire a coach that wanted Kyler Murray. He has done everything you could ask him to do since the season ended, and for people to kill him for a decision that was out of his control. He had no opportunity to come to camp and compete with Kyler Murray. There was nothing he could have done for the Arizona Cardinals for him to be like, hey, let me come and try to fight for a job that is obviously Kyler's. I've always thought he could be a good player. I think he's handled himself perfectly in a very difficult circumstance since the Cardinals season ended.
All right, well, Josh Rosen now gets a new chance to start again in Miami. Let's get back to the NBA. Sixers and Raptors open the second round of the playoffs this weekend with Toronto taking game one. Kawhi had a playoff career high 45 points on just 23 shots to lead the way in a 108-95 Toronto win. Sixers couldn't find a way or a single player to really stop him. CeCe, was the performance by Kawhi and the Raptors a sign of things to come for this series, in your opinion?
Well, this Kawhi right here is the best Kawhi that I've seen. If you go back to the NBA Finals when he faced LeBron, when he basically first got onto the national stage, he had been in the playoffs and stuff before, but not just as a one-dimensional, oh, man, he's a great defender. This is Kawhi with everything that you would want a basketball player to have. We know he's an elite defender. We know he can defend four or five different positions. But, man, what he's doing offensively, his ability to be able to dribble the basketball, to be able to get to his spots on the court, the variety of shots that he can hit. There's only one other player, Kevin Durant, that has that type of arsenal that we've seen in the playoffs, mid-range. I mean, and if you foul him, dead eye from the free throw line, it was exciting to see because I seen a guy who came into the league and was limited in the things that he can do. But it just goes to show, you are responsible for your own growth in what you do as a player. That being a professional athlete, that's what it's about, getting better. And that's what Kawhi, since he was drafted in San Antonio, every single year until the year last year when people were criticizing, oh, he's faking an injury, oh, he don't want to play. He had a serious injury. There was a misdiagnosis by San Antonio, and now we are seeing Kawhi as healthy as we have seen him since Zaza slipped up under
absolutely
and he hurt his ankle in that playoff game. So it's exciting to see. Plus, I'm a big fan of Kawhi. I've been following his career since he came into the NBA, and the overall growth that you see, it's amazing.
On the Raptors side of this series, I'm really excited for two things. One is for the world to be officially introduced to Pascal Siakam, who I believe is going to win Most Improved Player in the NBA this year, and next year will go into the season with all-star level expectations, as he should. He has improved amazingly from year one to two, and now from year two to three, he jumped about three steps. And then to be reintroduced to Kawhi Leonard, because we haven't seen him. We haven't seen Kawhi fully functional and healthy since the series before that Warriors series game one, when Kawhi by himself almost had the Spurs up 20 points before Zaza stuck his ankle underneath him and derailed the rest of that postseason and all of the next year for Kawhi and the Spurs. Kawhi in the series before that Warriors series, his last healthy playoff series, was a world destroyer. And that is what he was in the first round this year and what he was in game one. He was, as we talk, Giannis taking a step backwards, KD being extraordinary. It was Kawhi reminding everyone, hey, if you're talking about that best player in the world title, don't forget about me up in Canada. Canada's still part of the world now. I should be eligible. He was as good as you can be on both ends of the ball. And the Sixers' answer for him, Jimmy Butler, was non-existent. Joel Embiid didn't look right. Like, everyone on the Sixers really played poorly, and you could see the Raptors had a full plan. And if the Raptors, they didn't even have to catch fire from three or anything like that to dominate the game.
Right, that's why I think Kawhi, because if you look at the defenders he was going against, Joel Embiid, all NBA, Ben Simmons, Nick will call him one of the best defenders. Jimmy Butler, he has made his reputation in the league as one of the best. He destroyed them all. Oh. He went straight through them. And to me, I was a little shocked that Ben Simmons didn't want more of them, and Jimmy Butler wanted them, but there was nothing that he could do against them. So that, to me, Kawhi had one of the most impressive, if not the most impressive weekend because of who he was going against.
And Ben Simmons defended him for more possessions than anybody, and those he was the only guy Kawhi was under 50% against, but they evidently needed Ben Simmons to guard him for all the possessions because Kawhi was 5-5 against Tobias, 5-6 against Jimmy Butler, 2-2 against James Ennis. So, like, he just eviscerated everybody other than Simmons. And for the Sixers, they got real big problems right now. They were swept by Toronto during the year. See, you pointed out Kawhi now individually is what against Philadelphia?
14-0, 4-0 since he's been with the Raptors.
So he's never lost to the franchise. They've beat him every time this year. And the Sixers, we'll probably talk about it more as the series goes on if it continues in this direction. The Sixers tried to microwave the process now. They had a long-term process. And then they trade for Jimmy Butler. They trade for Tobias Harris. They go all in on this season. If that ends in a second-round defeat, they're going to have some questions to answer, especially because Jimmy and Tobias can walk after this season.
Joel Embiid is not going to be held to what happened in game one. You don't think the Sixers will adjust? And it's going to be hard for Kawhi to put up another 45-point effort or at least close to it. You don't think this series evens out a little bit?
Oh, Kawhi's going to go for 30. Toronto's a better, but they ain't got no one to be able to stop him. Now, Ben Simmons, he's going to have a great series. Joel Embiid, though, the competition that he is facing, Serge Ibaka and Mark Gasol. Oh, this he's not going to be able to walk through like he did against Brooklyn. Brooklyn does not have a center on their roster. They got a bunch of undersized forwards. What Gasol and what Siakam, what they do to him physically and from a strategy standpoint, bring him out to the three-point line. So now Kawhi and Siakam, they can get to the hole as much and with no one to be able to defend it. So this is going to be a tough series for Joel Embiid, who came in injured.
And if you watch Mark Gasol on the offensive end, you'd say, he's not the player he was. He didn't get the free throw line once. He was 3-8 from the field. And you're like, oh, of every player in the game, who had the best plus minus? It's Mark Gasol. You know why? Because when he was on the court, Embiid was not only neutralized, Embiid was just taken away from the game entirely. Mark Gasol defensively was playing like Defensive Player of the Year from 6 years ago, Mark Gasol.
Yeah, and don't forget, him as a Defensive Player of the Year, Kawhi's been Defensive Player of the Year. They're the only team in the NBA that has that type of problem they present. Siakam will be an all-NBA defender.
Danny Green
Lowry,
has been
Danny
one.
Green has been an all-NBA defender. So when you look at this matchup, they present a bunch of problems for the 76ers.
They can defend every position. They can switch. And Siakam, if Siakam shoots 80% and scores damn near 30, this would be a sweep.
All right, we got a break. Coming up, do the refs cost the Rockets game one? That's ahead. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Super Bowl champ and Patriots defensive lineman Michael Bennett joins the show. Hey, Michael.
Y'all good?
Almost breaking our desk, big old man. Good to see you, man. How are you?
Man, you're at the Patriots, man. Can we trust you and everything? You sure you're not got a hidden camera or something? You sure?
Nah, no hidden camera right
okay.
now.
Okay.
That's all good.
Good to see you, sir.
Glad to have you, man.
All right, so let's do that, Michael. Let's talk about your new team, the New England Patriots. Executives reportedly believe New England made a number of smart moves in this year's draft, highlighted by selecting wide receiver Kenyal Harry at the end of the first round, Michigan linebacker Chase Winovich, and Alabama running back Damon Harrison III, while also grabbing Tom Brady's potential replacement, Auburn quarterback Jarrett Stidham, in the fourth round. Michael, this is your third straight Super Bowl winning organization. What have you learned that makes teams like the Patriots who they are?
I think it's accountability. I think when a team is accountable to each other and they care about each other, I think it just makes the organization a lot better. And I think when you have a coach who has a clear and concise message each and every day, I think it makes a team come together and they have a lot of morale. And I think Bill Belichick does a great job of being honest. Doug Peterson does a great job of being honest. Mm-hmm. Pete Carroll, too. So when you have that, everybody can follow suit. And then they always have the best players, always the best leader. If you look at Seattle Seahawks, Russell Wilson was the best leader, and he always was first when we were running. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady's the great leader. And also Carson Wentz, he was also a great leader. And I think when you have an organization, they pinpoint a great leader who is also the best player, it makes the organization a lot better.
You said Belichick's message has been consistent through the what is his message? What is that consistent message that you take day in and day out is always there?
Man, every time you watch anything, it's always do your job. It's like everybody does their job to win. Nobody's greater than the whole. Everybody does what they're supposed to do. That's why they don't always have the best players on defense or the best players on offense when you talk about statistically or numbers, but they always have the players who make the big plays at the big moment because they're doing their job.
Some people might think that someone like yourself, not me, would be a good fit for New England. Now, I know you're a perfect fit. For one is you've been to other organizations. You're playing for nothing but championships, not money, not Pro Bowls, and you're a very versatile player. How much are you looking forward at this point in your career to learning new things and being coached by Bill Belichick himself?
I think it's a great opportunity. For one, I get to play with Tom Brady and Devin McCourty and all these great guys, Dante Hightower, guys who's been in great situations, guys who know about team. And I'm just want to learn about leadership and learn about how to, you know, be on the team and fit in and do all these different things. And I think they do a great job of that. And Bill Belichick also, he's the Jedi when it comes to defense and when it comes to team and organization, as being a young business owner and father and all these different things. It's a great opportunity to learn from somebody like Bill Belichick when it comes to how to organize your organization and how to be the leader and you know, have that message that people follow all the time. And I think this is a great time. And I think the city of New England is just outstanding.
Boston, Foxborough, Boston. The whole upper Massachusetts area. The other question, to go back to the start of the segment, which is Pat's had a great draft, and you asked what distinguishes those three organizations. You mentioned the coaches. But the other thing that Seattle, Philly, and New England have, John Schneider, Howie Roseman, and Belichick wears both hats in New England. What they do during the draft, year after year, is it's not necessarily that they are better at selecting players, because that's almost a crapshoot for everybody. But they understand the process of the draft as well as anybody ever. Seattle went into this year's draft a week and a half ago. They had 4 picks. All of a sudden, by midway through the second round, they had 11 picks because they kept wheeling and dealing. New England, in the draft, the first pick and the last pick they made were the ones that were assigned to them by the league. Every other player they picked was with the draft pick they traded up for or down for or traded for in a previous year. Like, they understand that the ability to pick multiple players, but then They saw Jo'Wan Williams, pardon me, a guy they targeted, a guy they thought was good value. They'll move up and go get him. Understand Roseman would do the same thing in Philly. Yeah,
but also, too, I also think they don't just draft the player, they draft the mindset. I think a lot of times organizations just go out there, oh, this guy looks so pretty as this. Mm-hmm. They draft somebody who has a story, who has something to prove, a chip on their shoulder, and that stays consistent through that with that player through his time in the league. A lot of organizations don't do that. They draft the guy who might not love football as much as they think. They go after a guy who loves football, who loves everything about it, the process, the pain of it, the injury, everything about it, and then they draft that guy.
This is not Belichick's first time trying to come after you, though. Yeah. Now, he tried to come after you before. How did you hear about the trade? Because you were on our show, and we had had some private conversations as far as what you thought about your career moving forward. Next thing you know, man, you're off to New England. Did you hear from Belichick, or who else in the organization, or did someone else in the organization reach out to you?
No, Belichick reached out to me and wanted me to come out there, and I went to New England, and, you know, it was just, I felt like it was a good fit. I think it was a good fit for me, how, you know, being able to be, I never really played in the AFC before, and this is my first time really being in the AFC conference, and being on that team I thought was a good fit for me, and understanding how Belichick uses players on defense and giving, you know, matchups and different things like that, I thought it was a great opportunity, so it turned out well.
And while the Patriots are known for being very cost conservative, what they have done is, if they key on a player that they think can be a big difference maker, whether it was Darrelle Revis a few years ago, whether it was Stephon Gilmore a couple years ago, or you this season, that Belichick will say, okay, we'll open up the checkbook a bit, because one of your issues with Philadelphia was wanting a new contract. New England didn't seem like they had much problem giving you some new money or different money, moving it around. When they think they have an impact player that can make a difference that year, they'll go out and do that, as it appears they did for you this season.
Yeah. For me, the Eagles, it was more about competition and not, I felt like at this point I wasn't at the stage of my career where I wanted to be a backup. I wanted to be in the game more consistently because I was still making high impact plays. If you look at the numbers compared to the players high
that
in the
they
league.
Paid.
Yeah, or just in the league, I was sure. still at the top of the game. So I wasn't looking to be a third or string or something like that. So it was more of about me being in the game and playing. At this point, that's really what I want to focus on, is being in a game and contributing to a defense, and I think that's what's really my main goal.
Very nice. All right, Michael, we'll have much more from you coming up a little later in the show. But on the other side, did the referees cost the Houston Rockets game one? That's next on First Things First. Things First, FS1 NBA analyst Sarah Kustak joins us. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, you guys. Good to see you.
Good morning.
What's happening? Good to see you, CeCe.
How you doing?
Wonderful, thanks.
Good.
Sarah, game one, Rockets at Warriors. We're going to pick this one up late, show you some late highlights. Warriors up 3, 17 seconds left. KD, 35 points, gets the ball stripped from him here. James Harden comes down, launches the 3. That doesn't go. Chris Paul tries to grab the loose ball. Not happy about the no foul call there. He gets the tech. And then subsequently ejected from the game. James Harden wanted the foul called on the shot, a theme that we had seen all game long in this one, Warriors not letting him land. Referees were a big theme on this night. Warriors win the game 104-100. Here's James Harden afterwards.
I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results. But when you, especially we all know what happened, you know, a few years back with Kawhi, like, that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results. And it's plain and simple.
James Harden, after the game, said he just wants a fair chance that the refs need to call the game the way it's supposed to be called. He just wants a fair chance. The refs need to call the game the way it's supposed to be called. He's specifically talking about closing out on three-pointers, feeling like he got fouled several times in those situations.
I've been fouled by James on a James three-pointer before. I ain't trying to hear that. Nah, I ain't going with that one. I'm straight.
All right, Sarah, is James Harden right to be upset with the officiating in this game?
I have yet to see a player that oftentimes after a game, and especially after a loss, is not upset with the officiating. I'll say a couple things. You know, I don't think while the officiating can impact a game, I think you always need to look at the game in the totality. And it's not just one play. It's not just one call. Mm-hmm. Specifically, though, these calls that were not made throughout the course of this game is something I have not seen all throughout the regular season. How it has been called in the regular season and in the playoffs, there has always been a point of emphasis to make sure you allow shooters space to land. That's something that's safety, always protecting the shooters, protecting the offensive player. That is something that I have seen called consistently, and it was not called. I mean, the one consistency throughout the course of this game was the fact that that was not called. And I think you can kind of nitpick a handful of those, but there was, I would say, three to four. What was there? Six of those?
Well, there was four in the first half they admitted to. The Rockets believe there were eight total.
And I believe there was, okay, so eight total. I think you can kind of nitpick which ones, because James Harden is a player who, when he shoots, he lands a couple feet in front of where he takes.
But most three-point shooters do.
And right. But Harden even more dramatically, but the way the rule is written, the way it's been interpreted.
You need space to, a shooter needs space to land.
Even if you're landing forward.
Yes.
Your point is the best one, which is you can't call it one way for the regular season, the first round, and then in this series, in this round, just decide, Harden's too gimmicky for me, I'm not calling it. And this is, for the Rockets, when you saw D'Antoni and Chris Paul and Harden's frustration, three total technicals, Harden after the game, it's because they feel like it's same old story. Sam Amick wrote this in The Athletic. It was something I had talked about during the offseason. The Rockets have, that we only get the two-minute reports. The Rockets get the full game reports. You can request them from the league. And in six of the seven games in last year's series, the Warriors got the edge in officiating to the tune of over 90 points. In their game January 3rd during the epic overtime game, Kevin Durant's running 5 feet out of bounds, and they missed that. And now in this game, it's not that they needed all the calls. It's in a game this close, if they get one or two of them, especially early in the game, it would have sent Klay to the bench with foul trouble. Harden to the free throw line, Klay to the bench. They're already shorthanded. The Rockets are not wrong. Both these things can be true. The Rockets could have won despite the officiating. You can argue should have won despite the officiating. That can be true, and this can also be true. If the refs do their job, the Rockets are up 1-0 in this series. And I don't blame them for being bitter about it, because you don't get many opportunities where the Warriors are on 36 hours rest when Klay and Steph are clearly somewhat compromised.
This was the game.
To win a game like this in Oracle. And so they feel like that once again, same old story, we got to beat the Warriors, and we got to beat them by 12 to 14 points because the refs are going to give them 10 to start with, and we saw it again yesterday.
I'm sure that the coach, when he goes over it, yes, they will go over these plays, but the game didn't boil down to just the refs.
Right.
And we can go back and forth, the refs. I can pick at least two times that Harden did kick his legs out. Now, there's three obvious times, two with Klay, that he landed in Harden's spot. But Harden has made it difficult to ref him. And in this game, there's at least two times where he kicks his legs out. Now, that's not landing, because they're trying to go sideways. And when you kick your legs out and stop the defender from going sideways, they're not going to call it. The referee was right next to him. On this one right here, he's right next to him. Draymond went straight up, and him kicking his legs out drew the contact.
Yeah, like this one, I don't think
the
was
final a, that's play of the game. I don't think was a bad call.
Right.
I agree with you both on
and
that.
I think
the
a couple of them
the
came
game.
Early. Came
so
in the first
to think
half.
That the referee started this game is if this is some conspiracy off of last year's playoff game. No, I guarantee you they started the game with intention. Man, we're going to try to call the best game, and they let you know a little bit at halftime when they admitted, man, we missed a couple calls. So it's something the Rockets are going to have to get around, because that was a huge mistake by not being consistent during the regular season. But the first half after that, why didn't the Rockets adjust? Because every basketball player, especially in competitive championship situations, they adjust to the whistle. Whatever they start calling the first quarter, you know your coaches tell you they've been calling it. You can't expect them to change. So in this game, from the beginning, like all the other playoff games where they allowed them to be more physical in the court, this game they allowed them to be able to land up under the shooters more than I've seen
and
during
also,
the regular
Zach
season.
Zach Zarba, Josh Tiven, I know them very well. They have been around the game for a long time. What I didn't like is the word fair. Like, fair to me questions the integrity of the game, what the officials are doing. You know, it is one of the hardest jobs that you are going to do. The NBA, very transparent. I'm curious to see what the 2-minute report, the whole report, like that to me is where I think I don't think there is an agenda.
I don't think there's an agenda either.
I think he's a challenging player to officiate.
All that's definitely true, but it's also true that if you're an official and you acknowledge we missed four of these, it cost them 10 free throws in the first half, then maybe in the third quarter when you miss a foul on Chris Paul, don't tee him up for reacting and then tee up D'Antoni for reacting there when you know one of the reasons they're on edge is because
well,
what happened
we don't know what Chris Paul said. There's some automatics as soon as you say them, and this seemed like an automatic. Chris Paul didn't get the call. The ref was off the court. And Chris Paul, as soon as he said it, they teed him up immediately.
And then the one other officiating element is if we're going to say, okay, they're going to call it this way the whole game, adjust. The other thing that happened yesterday is it's amazing how this happens. The moment Steph Curry got his fifth foul, he turns into the world's best defender. Because, oh, he can bump James Harden out of bounds. Oh, he can reach now. So if you're going to call Steph one way the whole game, then once he gets, you can play Steph with five fouls if you're not going to foul him out of the game. The Rockets will get this info, and I would bet my life it's going to be another game where once you crunch the numbers, it's going to be a greater than double-digit point edge for the Warriors. They should be upset, even if they want to be upset with themselves for missing corner threes, for Capella doing nothing, for Gerald Green somehow being minus 16 in 7 minutes, which in a close game should be impossible. It swayed the outcome of the game.
But just quickly, if they called game one like this, will they be consistent in calling this series like this? And if they do, can the Rockets
adjust? What we've seen in the NBA, we have seen awful game ones as far as calls. Typically, the coaches get in the ref's ear, and in that game number two, it's an immediate correction.
Okay.
All right? They're going to be shooting three-pointers. All right? That's what they do. That's their game plan. So they will call it probably different, especially to start the game. Some of those landing, I believe, will be called, especially on Clay, because Clay's the one involved more so than the other defender.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.